Welcome to a special July 4th holiday edition of the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. I just had some things on my mind, and that's one of the great things about doing podcasts. I don't have to wait to be in a radio studio somewhere to kind of bark this stuff out. But here we are, 244 years after they signed the Declaration of Independence, and I just had some stuff in my head that I thought it needs to get out. And maybe if it gets out, it will do some good. Maybe not. I learned a long time ago, in this business especially, you're running a 50-50 line here, meaning half the people listened to things that I would do on the radio, for example, couldn't stand me, but they listened anyway. And the other half thought I was the best thing they ever heard, and they listened. So you kind of get a little bit of both worlds. But we live in a really interesting time, and that's all about perspective, because it's always been interesting times. And I think that's one of the things that we lose perspective on, that this country that was founded in 1776 on paper has had a rough go of it by our own hand. And we are a ragtag bunch, if there ever was one. If you look around the world, maybe except for Australia, where they're similar in the fact that, of course, they were populated by prisoners, basically. But you think about how this country started and the reasons that it started, and so much of how we live our lives today, to a greater or lesser degree, still is seeped in from those early days of wanting to do our own thing and all that goes along with that. So with all that in mind, I wanted to do something I've never done before on radio in a podcast, and I'm going to read the Declaration of Independence. And I'm going to read it to understand it even more. I mean, I've gone back and forth over it, and a piece of paper that was created and signed by 56 men 244 years ago in many ways still stands up today. And of course, in many ways, the world was a very different place. The average life expectancy was 54. The only thing that's same as it was then as it is now is lawyers were at the top of the economic pyramid, which hasn't changed at all, unfortunately. But it was a very different world then. But the reasons for breaking off into the new world and creating this experiment that we call America, that's constantly evolving and de-evolving sometimes, you know, carries with it a lot of moment. And when I was in college, I read the Declaration of Independence. A couple times after that, I picked it up and read it, and I started to think about the impact that it's had of these men sitting down and writing this. And truly amazing, some of the things that people don't know about it, that I've done some digging on. And, for example, John Adams actually refused to celebrate the 4th of July as Independence Day. And the reason for that is because he thought July 2nd was formally declared on July 2nd, 1776, the Declaration of Independence. That's the date John Adams believed would be the most memorable in the history of America because it was done on the 2nd. And he actually wrote a letter to his wife, Abigail, declaring this, saying July 2nd is going to go down in history as the most momentous thing we've ever done. And when it came around to, you know, getting it actually signed and finished on the 4th, for the most part, he's like, I'm not on board with that. Matter of fact, it wasn't until August of that year that the thing was fully finished. So July 4th could have easily been July 2nd. And when I think of the little pieces that of the puzzle that had to come together to make it work for all these men who were, listen, these guys were not all on board with each other. I mean, we got to be clear with that. They always didn't get along. They had their very specific views unto themselves. They argued constantly about what needed to happen and what didn't. 25 of the 56 signers were lawyers or jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers. 1 was a teacher. 1 was a musician. 1 was a printer. They were all guys of means and education to some degree. And yet, they argued constantly about how to put this thing together. But they had to be together. Otherwise, it wasn't going to work. And that is, to me, the most profound, resonating, long-lasting historical lesson of this document. Basically, once they attached their signatures to that document, each of them knew they were committing treason against the British crown. If they were caught and captured, they risked death. But they did it anyway. And so, while that's a very long time ago, here we are today with people who feel that it's tyrannical if they're asked to wear a face mask. So I'm all about it, meaning the flags and the fireworks and all great, fantastic, always, it's part of our heritage. But I'm not sure, because most people think their history starts the day they were born and they don't go any further back than that. Most people, the last book they read is their high school yearbook because it's got pictures in it. But history is a great teacher. We're just really shitty students sometimes. So when you pull back and get a perspective on all of this stuff and you read history as best you can, look, there's even history is slanted one way or the other, but at least get some information that's past Twitter, Facebook, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and you have your wits about you, you can see that there's a pattern here, that we go through these ups and downs, and this tug of war has been going on. Even when we broke away from the crown, the tug of war began in a different direction. But before I get into a few more things, I just wanted to share this with you. In Congress, July 4, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them to seem most likely to effect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing inevitably the same object evinces a design to reduce under the absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such a government and provide a new guard for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their form systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and insults, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused to set his laws, the most wholesome and necessary, for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation until his assessment should be attained, and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right given to them and formidable only to tyrants. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual and uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly, for opposing with manly firmness his invasions of the rights of the people. He has refused for a very long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and from convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for the purpose of obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing justice and power. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislature. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders that they might commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries as to so render it once an example and fit instrument for inducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. After taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the form of our governments. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for all of us in all cases whatsoever. He's abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens to take captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrection among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indians, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble of terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in our attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We've reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We've appealed to their native justice, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connection and correspondence. They too have been deaf to the voice of justice and congruity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity of which denounces our separation, hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have the full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all the other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. I mentioned earlier the vocations of the men that signed the Declaration of Independence. And what would happen to them? That was the big show. You know, it was easy when it was easy. And you get into that courtroom and you sign it off and you slap each other's backs, then you got to go back to life. Five signers were captured by the British and brutally tortured as traitors. Nine fought in the war for independence and died from wounds or from hardship as they suffered. Two lost their sons in the Continental Army. Another had two sons captured. At least a dozen of the 56 had their homes pillaged and burned. In the face of advancing British army, the Continental Congress fled from Philadelphia to Baltimore on December 12th of 1776. It was an especially anxious time for John Hancock, as his wife had just given birth to a baby girl. Due to the complications stemming from the trip to Baltimore, the child only lived a few months. William Ellery's signature came at the risk of his fortune, proved only too realistic. In December of 1776, during 3 days of British occupation of Newport, Rhode Island, Ellery's house was burned and all his property was destroyed. Richard Stockton, a New Jersey State Supreme Court justice, had rushed back to his estate near Princeton after signing the Declaration of Independence to find that his wife and children were living like refugees with friends. They had been betrayed by a Tory sympathizer who also revealed Stockton's own whereabouts. British troops pulled him from his bed one night, beat him, and threw him in jail where he almost starved to death. When he was finally released, he went home to find his estate had been looted, his possessions burned, his horses were gone. Judge Stockton had been so badly treated in prison that his health was ruined and he died before the war's end. His surviving family had to live the remainder of their lives off charity. Carter Braxton was a wealthy planter and trader. One by one, his ships were captured by the British Navy. He loaned a large sum of money to the American cause. It was never paid back. He was forced to sell his plantations and mortgage other properties to pay his debts. Thomas McKean was so hounded by the British that he had to move his family constantly. He served in the Continental Congress without pay and kept his family in hiding during the entire war. Vandals or soldiers both looted the properties of Clymer, Hall, Harrison, Hopkins, and Livingston. 17 of them lost everything they owned. Thomas Hayward, Jr., Edward Rutledge, and Arthur Middleton, all of South Carolina, were captured by the British during the Charleston Campaign of 1780. They were kept in dungeons at the St. Augustine Prison until exchanged a year later. At the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson, Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the family home for his headquarters. Nelson urged General Washington to open fire on his own home. This was done, and the home was destroyed. Nelson later died bankrupt. Francis Lewis also had his home and properties destroyed. The British jailed his wife for 2 months, and that and other hardships from the war so affected her health that she died only 2 years later. Honest John Hart, a New Jersey farmer, was driven from his wife's bedside when she was near death. Their 13 children fled for their lives into the fields. Hart's fields and grist mill were laid to waste. For over a year, he eluded capture by hiding in nearby forests. He never knew where his bed would be from the next night, often slept in caves. When he finally returned home, he found his wife had died, his children disappeared, his farm and stock were completely destroyed. Hart himself died in 1779 without ever seeing any of his family again because he signed a piece of paper. Of course, the big names are the ones that grab the headlines to this day. Thomas Jefferson is often called the author of the Declaration of Independence, but he wasn't the only person who contributed to the important ideas. Jefferson was a member of a five-person committee appointed by the Continental Congress to write the Declaration. The committee was Jefferson, Ben Franklin, John Adams, Robert Livingston, and Roger Sherman. Actually, Jefferson was quite unhappy about some of the edits made to his original draft. He had originally included some severe language condemning the British for promotion of slave trade, even though Jefferson himself was a slave owner. This criticism of the slave trade was removed in spite of Jefferson's objections. And oddly enough, both Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of the vote to approve the Declaration of Independence. You know, America's hard. And maybe it's hard because of how it began. It was hard. I don't know many people alive today that I personally know, or maybe even don't know, but watch them on TV or politicians, that would be willing to sign their death warrant, knowing they were going to lose everything. It's a very different game. And it's hard, at least from my perspective, to watch all this take place, especially nowadays, keeping in mind that there's always been difficult times. We go through these waves of up and down, and in and out and back and forth. And, you know, sometimes we're moving forward with great progress, and other times we get stopped cold in our tracks and revert. And so all the protests and the march and the looting, I saw that in 68 and saw it in 65 and, you know, these things. And I wonder if we ever have any progress anymore. Bucky Fuller, the great inventor, said, "It's obvious that our technology is surpassing our humanity." I was with my daughter this morning, actually, dropping her off for an errand, and I was telling her about watching a special on PBS last night about the Statue of Liberty and how it was put together and why, and the pomp and circumstance when it was put in the harbor in New York, and just, it's a big deal. And it was all about, at that time, really, was kind of the sculptor thumbing his nose at France saying, look, they're doing it right over here. Look at the liberty they got going. We need to have some of that, in a nutshell. And that was a big deal. There were these exhibitions, the World Exhibition. These were big deals. I don't remember any big deals lately, if at all, where I was left gasping in a good way. And felt like, man, is that something? Most of our progress now comes from the latest iPhone. We're bombarded with commercials for stuff. And yet we really need more character than anything else. It's better to, as I've learned growing up, it's better to have character than to be one. And there's a lot of characters on our landscape that are trying to get us to do things. And that's really the nature of politics. But in all of that, it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It doesn't say you're guaranteed any of those things. Life is up to you, how you live your lives, no matter who's in the White House or not. Liberty, we can go from state to state and you know, outside of the COVID stuff, which is a greater good thing, and you can descend into tug of war over that at another time. But for the most part, we have liberty here, you know, and we so take it for granted. But I'm also reminded of the fact that there's a lot of places in the world where it's freedom, and it's not as rare as it used to be. How we define that freedom is what makes it rare, unique to us as Americans, how we do that. And the pursuit of happiness, it's just a simple line in the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. As long as you're not pissing everybody else off or stepping on everybody else's stuff, or throwing shit on somebody else's porch, you have the ability to go pursue happiness. Doesn't mean you're going to catch it. It just means you have the ability to pursue it. And so when I was thinking about doing something today, I was looking for some leverage to have something different. You know, I'd like to have a pivot point somewhere. It's probably an oversized, overinflated ego part of me that thinks that this could matter anymore, that we could somehow get past the fact that there are people that think that if we just all said the Pledge of Allegiance every day, everything would be all better. If it was so simple, wouldn't that be great? It's not. It's a complex society we live in. And finding our way in it is hard. Just look at the last 4, 5, 6 months. It's mind-boggling to me. And mind-boggling in the sense that when you really strip it all down past the flags and the pomp and the circumstance and the parades, kind of like, what the hell's going on here? And to not have the response we need on a state, local, and certainly national level is a bit surprising to me. It just shows you who we are and who we're not. So I think of the greatest generation quite often these days. We are not that. I can't imagine how we'd act in mass if we had to really pull our shit together in one sock. We can't get people to... It's astonishing. It's astonishing, but also very predictable. The pandemic in 1918, right after the war was over, World War I, same thing happened. Same thing happened. So we are very predictable creatures, which is unfortunate on one level. And on the other level, it's like, well, at least you have an idea and know what's coming. Sir Isaac Newton's laws are always in play, and his third law is, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That is not confined to the physical laws of gravity and such like that. That our lives for better or for worse, are built or broken on the actions we take or the ones we don't. And for every action that you put out there, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's what makes things difficult. And so as I watch the chaos in the world, you can see how it's predictable that if we keep doing what we're doing, expecting a different result, that's not possible. It's a tug of war, basically, with no winners. It's constant. So staying out of the politics of this for me, which is, the longer I'm around, especially doing radio, Gary Meyer, who was the show that you heard prior to this one, you can click on it with the G-Man, made a statement I thought was really important. He said, I don't do politics because it doesn't do anything for people except piss them off. That's true. Any revelations I would have on a political piece of information or whatever, it's just fodder to gnaw on. But what I will say, as I always say, especially on this 4th of July, is I remember my family and friends who are not here to celebrate with me, even who are, you know, just going to crack a beer in the yard, put my feet in the pool, is that I've never seen Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative on a headstone, ever. And it is one of the lessons that have stayed with me my entire life. When I walk through a cemetery, I see father, mother, sister, brother, auntie, uncle, veteran for sure. But I've never seen any political delineations on the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of headstones I've seen over the years going to funerals and burials. And so I work backwards from that. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the things that are most important to each of us, figuring those things out because these men signed a piece of paper 244 years ago, which was also their death warrant to some of them and for many of them. And how do we represent that all these years later, these decades, these millennia later? I'm not sure what we would, we're not the greatest generation by any stretch. I think sometimes we're the generation that had it all but didn't know what the hell to do with it. So, there's a little Declaration of Independence trivia, and I enjoyed doing that. I wish things were simpler, but they were never simple to begin with. And when it's hard, you do it hard. Let's not major in minor things. Let's remember who we are, that we're better than this. I've seen it. You've seen it. And the only way that that happens is when each of us on our own platform make those moves and represent that to the best of our ability. And then everything they wrote is something we're living. It's not just a piece of paper. Happy 4th of July. Safe travels.